All right, so I'd like to talk about thought as an object of attention, as an object of awareness, and how can we use meditation as a way to really unpack and explore and work with thought so it doesn't drive us in the same way that it becomes more of a tool that we can pick up consciously. So far the class is really focused on grounding in the body, feeling the sensations of the body, knowing that okay, here's sensation versus my thoughts of that sensation. Here's the breath versus my concept of the breath. Even using emotions as an object of attention, as felt in body sensation. So every time thought arose until tonight, we were just practicing releasing thought. And again, as we talked about with some of the questions, it can be really helpful to keep that as almost a primary thing. Because we have so much momentum to become lost in thought. And learning to connect with the present moment does take some time, takes a level of stability. Because it's almost that body contact, feeling the sensations of the breath, the body, or also sound, helps us really connect with the present moment, connect us to the here and now, versus the past or the future, or our sense of elaboration and kind of what do you call it? The kind of fabrication that we place upon the present moment, the projections we may put on the moment. Because thought has a certain momentum to it. It's almost like a fast-moving stream that when we first try to wade into it, we're swept downstream very quickly. So we learn how to first kind of put our toes in the water and notice, okay, there's the water. Here's my land. I have one foot in the land, one foot in the water. And that way I start to learn the difference. And eventually I start to feel that stability that I can start to enter in to that stream. Because our basic, the dilemma that we deal with, the kind of the reality of the, I don't know if it's just the modern mind, but certainly now that that's what the mind I know. James Joyce described it this way in Dubliners with his character, Mr. Duffy, who lived a short distance from his body. And Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And I think we all have that experience that we might be driving someplace and don't even realize how we got there because we're just on autopilot. We're just lost in a thought. And so often we go through life that way, really a short distance from our body. And meditation is learning how to come back into that body to really orient ourselves. So tonight we kind of expanded the instructions to include thought as an object of awareness, as something that we can actually bring into the meditative perspective. So learning how to observe thought, to recognize its presence, first of all, that, okay, here is thought. And instead of just releasing it automatically, to actually learn to observe it without becoming lost in it. That's the big caveat. It's hard to observe thought without becoming lost in it. So one technique we practiced in the guided meditation was labeling or noting. Okay, thinking is arising. Doesn't matter what thought it might be, just to simply notice it. And then we can also go into noticing the type of thought a little bit more precisely. This is particularly helpful when we have a kind of repetitive pattern of mind that we go through. Sometimes people take on something like judging. And every time they find a judging thought arise, they note it as judging. And you may find that you do that 100 times in a day or 1,000 times in a day. But each time you notice that, you start to become less lost in it. You start to notice it as thought instead of a statement of reality. And that's the big thing, is that shift of seeing thought as an absolute statement of reality and just seeing it as this thing that's arising. I think an almost universal experience on as going through a class like this, you realize how much your mind thinks and how random it is. I mean, can you just say, okay, I want the mind to turn off. I'm just going to focus on my breath for the next half hour. How successful is that? Can you control the next thought that comes into your mind? You might be for a short period, but eventually something else will come up. And as meditators, we start to learn to observe that whole phenomenon. And just by the observation itself, we start to become a little less entangled in our thought. So observing, labeling thought, it means that we've started to shift to the place of observation versus being lost in it. We've gained a sense of perspective that thought is arising and going through. We know that we are thinking versus leaving our thoughts as face value. So we start to see thinking objectively, and so we're not so lost in it. This is a really tremendous skill to develop. Because our thoughts, they're sometimes illogical, sometimes they're filled with hatred, sometimes with prejudice, sometimes with self-criticism, and we tend to believe all those thoughts. We start to realize, have this sense of spaciousness, a perspective of observing that thought, we're not so driven by it. We're not so lost in it. This starts to open a very different relationship to thought and really to ourselves. Not only to ourselves, but to the entire world and every other person that we come across. Because usually we take thought as being something substantial, as being a statement of truth, of reality. We have some experience and we create a whole story around it. A story of identity, what it means about us, a story that we have to believe in and we have to act out. And so we learn to come back and practice to the original sense data that generated those thoughts. There's a story that Sharon Salzberg uses to teach this. Sharon Salzberg is one of the Westerners who first went back to Asia some, at this point, 40, 50 years ago. And learn this ancient tradition from the East and the meditative masters, and was given permission to come back and start to teach it. Her and her colleague Joseph Goldstein founded one of the first insight centers here in the United States, back in Barre, Massachusetts. So there's a story I'm going to share. It says, I was teaching with my colleague Joseph Goldstein, when a student came to see him in great distress. The man said he just had a terrible experience. He was meditating, felt tension in his jaw, and suddenly realized what an uptight person he is, how he can't get close to anyone, and that he's going to be alone for the rest of his life. Joseph said, "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" The man continued with his projections. He said that he was pretty sure he'd always be tense. He'll never change. He felt hopeless. "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" Joseph said again patiently. Sharon said, "I watched the man continue barreling down this path of misery for some time, all because of a sore jaw, until finally Joseph said, 'You're having a painful experience. Why are you adding a horrible self-image to it?'" And the story speaks to much of our experience, that we have some sensation, or we have an emotion, we have an experience, and our minds start to run away with it and add a level of suffering and difficulty. That's that painful self-image around it. And this is really the power of thought. It literally creates who we are, how we believe we are. And we're driven by it. We're victims of it. So learning to relate to thought just as another experience is a very important stage and step and really an insight into the nature of how things are. It's a very important part of our development as meditators. A bumper sticker I saw once said, "Don't believe anything you think." Or don't believe everything you think. And so that's kind of the bottom line of this whole class is learning not to believe everything that we think. Can you imagine how, the world would be changed if everyone didn't believe everything that came into their mind and started to hold it with a different perspective? So then you can start to see thoughts which have maybe more accuracy or more resonance with your heart, versus those that have the resonance with your fear, with our anger. So we don't believe everything we think. This starts to free us from being chained to our thinking. We start to be able to use thought as a tool, as a way to analyze, to figure out, to create the beauty of life, to plan. But I always hold it in perspective that it is a tool, it's not a meaning in itself. And as I mentioned in the questions and answers, in Buddhism, there's considered the six senses. You know, so all the senses that we focus mostly on sensation of the felt sense, the tactile sense, the kinesthetic sense, and the breath, body sensations. But there's also sound. We can also meditate with sight, with smell, with taste. And Buddhism also holds thought just as another sense. You just take that in. That's kind of radical. Like, what if you related to your thoughts just like you would relate to a sensation in your body? Kind of an equal balance. I mean, that would be very different to go through life that way. It's like, oh, there's a sensation. Just I might feel an ache in my leg and I might want to have just my posture or how I'm walking. A thought arises. It might be a painful thought and I may have to adjust around it. Or I could also see that maybe that thought is just passing through. So try holding it equal to breath, equal to sensation. Now, in reality, though, we've emphasized thought. You know, thought is really the kind of the king and queen of our experience. And so we often find like we're in a seesaw, that we're either connected to our body and breath or we're lost in thought. It's kind of like a one or the other. They almost feel like they're mutually exclusive at some point. But eventually we start to see that, okay, I can hold them both and see both arising. This is really asking us to step back into a deeper quality of stillness, a deeper quality of observation, of non-resistance, so we can see things arise and see, okay, thoughts arising, sensations arising, sounds arising. Something else is what's holding all that, is noticing all that. This is a deeper quality in relationship to meditation. And as your practice matures and deepens, you become more and more oriented to that stillness, that background stillness, which is holding whatever is arising. And in that holding, you have this clear seeing of it. And then from there, you can act in a skillful way. And, you know, we notice how wired we are to think. You know, our mind just likes to think. It goes all over the place. And so random, and sometimes seems senseless. And we meditate, we start to see that in relief because we're asking ourselves to be still and to connect with something else, and our thoughts just keep going, right? So learning how not to have, here's a secret I'll share. The less friction you have with the fact that you're thinking, the faster the mind will quiet down. The more friction you have with with whatever thought it is, the more noise you're going to generate. From day one, we've been practicing how to have non-resistance to this experience, including thought. And hopefully you've learned, I've tried to emphasize this, when thoughts arise, to release it gently, not to judge yourself, not to come back with that self-harshness. Because guess what? That's just another thought. It's a more personal thought, but you're just adding another elaboration upon this experience, just like that man with the jaw pain. So thought, it's actually a very deep topic to explore, because thoughts start to actually create the very way we perceive the world, how we perceive other people. You know, it's rare that we see someone without any filter, without any prejudice, without any sense of discrimination, bias, liking or disliking. It's very rare for that. The Buddha talked about it this way. It's kind of a statement which is a little confusing at first. They said from this body, this 6 foot long body or 5 foot long body, we create the world. So what he meant by that is that through our senses and our mind's interpretation of their senses, we create how we experience the world, how we imagine it and think how it actually is, both in ourselves and other people. So there's an example that kind of brings us to kind of the subtle quality of thought that we don't even realize is happening. And this is a bridge that was built in France going between, I guess, a river between Germany and and France. And this bridge was the tallest bridge in the world at that point, maybe still is. Now, what was interesting is that the French newspapers described this bridge as being very powerful and massive and just, very strong. While the German newspapers described it as being elegant and beautiful and graceful. Okay, so this is the same steel, same concrete. What's the difference? That's really how thought is shaped by those two cultures. In Germany, the word bridge is a feminine noun, while in France, in French, bridge is masculine. So just that simple interpretation, suddenly that gender construct that we put on the bridge, that becomes the way that we those two cultures view the bridge very differently. You can imagine them arguing about the bridge. It's elegant, no, it's powerful. And that just because thought has taken over. Right? So meditation allows us to start to wake up to those illusions of thought. And that starts to free the world from our projections. So we actually relate to the world how it is. And of course, you can take this simple example and extrapolate, into like something like racial bias, and how we see in someone who we think is other, and there's this whole story that comes up that's placed on this other person. We take it to ourselves, like I am a male, so I do this, I'm a female, so I do that. The whole idea of gender. I mean, these are all there's endless, countless examples of how we do this. And learning to have this different perspective with thought starts to free up all of those. And what it allows us to do is actually meet life how it is and use thought as a tool, not be driven by it. See another example. Screen, just monitoring the timing here. We if we go out and look at a tree in our yard or in the park, depending on our history or our experience, we see that tree through how we view it. Let's say we're a forester, so we look at the tree and we recognize, how much board feet might be in it, or we're a, or arborist, we see how it has to be pruned, or we might be a botanist and we recognize its species. Or maybe we're a child and we see where we could put a tree house. Maybe we like how it gives us shade, or maybe we don't like how it gives us shade. This is always that we project ourselves upon that moment. And meditation allows us to start to see through that illusion, to see how we've created the world, and allows us to start to free up the world so we can relate to it how it actually is. Now, thought can be very powerful. I mean, it's one of the most powerful things, especially when it's believed in. Now, I was kind of debating if I should share this example, but I think I will. It's from a medical journal, so I think it's fairly reputable, written back in 1936, I believe. And it was a story that was called Scared to Death. So what happened is this physician went into the prison system and found, a volunteer who was on death row and asked this young man who was 18, okay, you're going to die, you're going to be, I forget what country it was, be hung or something. How about instead, let's bleed you to death? It's less painful and, be a more pleasant way to go. So it was a psychological experiment, a little sadistic. So the prisoner agreed to do that. And so the prisoner was strapped down, blindfolded, and just gently scratched, not enough to break the skin on all his four limbs. And water was set up to drain into these bowls. At first, quite, loudly and then slowly down, slowing down. And the physician would be quieter and quieter now as he was speaking. And eventually, at the end, when the water stopped, the inmate had seemed to have fainted when actually had died, even though they hadn't lost a single drop of blood. So again, this may seem far-fetched, but the source seemed pretty reputable. And it's the power of how what we believe in, what we believe can create our reality. And so as meditators, we start to really question what our minds say. Not in a way of being bewildered, but actually through clarity. Okay, let me ground in my body. Let me feel what's present right here. Let me know when I'm going into worry and the stories around that worry, versus when I'm connected to the present moment. So let's talk a little bit more about how to work with thought, and then we'll have a chance for some walking. So the first step is learning to release thought. This is what we focused on the first 4 weeks, because thought, again, has that power to sweep us away. We become lost before we even realize it. It's like we've jumped on a train, and before we know it, we're miles down the tracks. So learning to connect with the body. Okay, thoughts are rising. Let me release that. Come back to this moment. That teaches us when I'm lost in thought and when I'm not. Once we start to notice that difference, then we can start to work with thought. And it's very helpful to keep the body as a reference point. Okay, I feel the body breathing. I feel the body sitting, walking, doing whatever activity. And then I can also see thought arise. So in daily life, you're having a conversation, just keep about 10-20% of your awareness in your body while you're speaking. If you do this, you'll find it's actually very helpful because your body's always telling you information. It's feeling when you start to feel some dissonance, when there's a contraction, when there's excitement, when maybe you're kind of shading the truth or telling a lie, your body is going to echo with that. And also at the same time, when you say something that's aligned and integritous, your body also echoes with that. So the stronger a thought has, the stronger pull a thought has, the more sticky it is, the more important it is to release the thought and come back to the body to kind of have that sense of stability. And then when our attention is more steady, then we can start to open to seeing the arising and passing away of thought, start to see it as a phenomenon going through. And that, as I talked about with Nikhil, is there's also the caveat when thoughts is really gripping and we want to have a way to work with it. Okay, where's that felt as a body experience? Where's the echoes within the body? Where's the generic, like talking with Jean about the sense, or is it Emily, sorry, the sense of worry and how that has it's always having different things to land on. What's worry felt as a generic phenomenon? You know, what's being taken as true. Sometimes having that simple and direct acknowledgement starts to loosen this whole grip of thought. It's like I think I may have already shared this, but but that story about walking in the woods and seeing the coil of rope. Do you remember that story? Yeah, so you see the coil of rope, you think it's a snake. The snake bites me. Certainly your mind kind of goes down this whole pathway of worry. Coming back to that raw sense data, there's something that's a coil of rope or a hose or a snake. Staying there starts to free up how thought drives us. So thought is a powerful tool. You know, it's how we create all the good things in our lives and also all the destructive things. It can be used for good, for creating, for discovering, for planning, and also for harm, for oppression, for illness, anxiety, worry, prejudice. So practicing learning to see it just as another experience, like the breath, like sound, we start to free it to be used well. And even more deeply, we start to see how it creates that world, how we view the world. And it starts to allow us to free the world from our projections, to actually meet it how it is. What a gift to be able to give ourselves and the world. All right, thank you. Let's just sit quietly for a few moments.